Okay, so we are here today with Trayvon, Emily, and myself, Penelope, and we are basically giving a brief summary right now for just chapter one, and I'll get started on that. So basically, chapter one was about specific samples, representative samples, how the data was collected, and just when you collect the data for your statistic, you have to make sure that the way it's collected and the people you use are just good to represent the data. So I'm rambling, but one of the examples that chapter one gave was when it talked about Yale. And it talked about how most of the graduates made $20,000 a year, which is apparently a lot back then.
It's a lot now.
$20,000.
I mean, that's a lot for me.
Okay, anyway. It basically talked about how when most people saw that statistic, they thought, oh, wow, you're almost guaranteed to make $20,000 a year, which, again, was a lot back then. But a statistician, is that what they call it? A statistician would look at that and think, well, how is this collected? And so you really have to look at, like, well, who did they actually interview? Did they interview all Yale graduates?
Right,
which,
like,
is kind of impossible to do because,
yeah,
like, some of them may have died. Some
it's,
of
like,
may...
really easy to, like, kind of scheme that information.
Yeah, it's
and
really
to, like,
easy to,
yeah,
like,
it's
twist.
Like, it's whoever's doing it is, like, all right, well, I want you to know this information because that's what will benefit me and,
yeah,
like, whatever.
Yeah, that's what that's
like,
will make
I'm,
this
like,
look better.
Promoting or whatever.
Yeah, so they can maybe even, like, choose who they decide to collect that statistic from. And
yeah, like,
so
the thing, wasn't it like they went around to the neighborhood, but, like, some people didn't want to be interviewed, some
yeah.
people moved away. So it's like, yeah, it's like all it's of the class, but of the people they could actually get
yes.
to, like,
yeah.
It's all a bunch
and,
of lies.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And that's where it comes down to a representative sample. There's no way that, in most instances, there's no way that you can actually interview every single person.
Right, yeah.
Sorry about that. We were talking about how when collecting a statistic, you also have to be careful how you collect it and just...
Oh, yeah, it's, like, impossible to get every single person.
Yeah, remember how we were talking about, like, something...
Yeah, before the commercial break, we were talking about that.
The commercial
yeah.
break.
We were talking about how, like, I read somewhere sometime, like, 70% of Americans hate Obama, and I was just thinking, like...
That's ridiculous.
Like, how do they, like, interview...
That's a ridiculous statistic.
How did they interview all Americans, and this just shows that it's impossible.
I'm pretty
they,
sure, like, not every American even knows who Obama is. Like, there are Americans
exactly.
who can't speak or read or write or anything. Like,
exactly. So, chapter one was basically just talking about gathering just a number out of the entire population that is supposed to represent that entire population,
yeah.
Which is really essentially what a representative sample is. It's not everyone in the population. It's just like a
yeah.
just a portion.
And then, like, when they do that, when they only, like, interview a specific amount of people, then, like, the outliers get involved.
Right, right, right.
And, and that's, like, a cool way to, like, use statistics to lie or to, yeah, use statistics to lie, because technically what you're saying is true, but it's, like, not...
It's like a...
Yeah.
It's not even,
it's
like
a... twisted...
A, yeah, it's like a fib or a white lie. It's just, like, a half-truth.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
a
yeah
half
you're
truth.
Tricking people.
It's trickery is what it is.
And base... another thing is, one of the examples here, it was talking about, say if you, like, worked for, like, a magazine or whatever, and you wanted this statistic to be as truthful as possible, and you wanted to get every sort of person possible to put into this population, and so, one of the suggested places to collect information about these people was a train station, I think it was, because lots of people go to train
right,
stations.
Right, yeah.
Everyone basically goes there. But a point that the chapter brought up was well, what about stay-at-home moms? They don't always travel. And so it comes back to the main point. It's nearly impossible. It's possible, but it's really, really hard to just find... What's the word I'm looking for?
Just, like, it's not, like... Unless, like... Like, when you first start learning about statistics in school and they say, like, all right, there's, like, a room of 10 people and 5 out of 10 of these people have red shoes on. Like, they started out specifically with a certain amount of people that you know, like, that's the amount of people that is, that's the amount of people you're working with.
Mm.
And I think that, like, it's great that, like, we learn about this stuff later because, like, that's not how real life is at all. Like, everyone's going to be lying. There's not going to be just, like, two out of five, three out of five, whatever. It's, like, so many more numbers and it's just, like... It's ridiculous. I think it makes me mad.
Yeah.
Cool thing I think about is like how the person who is taking the survey can use the representative group to go with their argument. So if I say I hate Obama and I want to prove that it's not only me that hates Obama, it's a fair amount of the American population,
mm-hmm.
I can go into a part of America that
Hates Obama.
And I can take
just
a
go
survey.
Exclusively like to like deep south.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing is, people usually when people see surveys and they do look into
they're opinionated and biased.
Yeah, and they look into the number of people. They don't look at like where the people are. So if I say, oh, everyone in America, 70% of people hate Obama, and I had a survey of 10,000 people. It's 10,000 people who are in place that don't like Obama, not 10,000 people across states.
Like so, when it comes down to it, you just have to be, like, really, like, in reality, like, what they do, like, with the statistics, if we did that in class, like, we'd get an F, because you'd be like, you can't do that.
Right.
You're doing, like, you're messing up this
sample. It's really
like,
biased.
Yeah, it's like, you have to have, like, everyone from every demographic, like, every
equal.
Single thing.
Yeah.
And, like, that's almost impossible to do. Like,
right.
Yeah.
And so, it's just, it also talked about on, like, the very end, some people tend to be biased to who
they
interview. It did give an example here where it talks about how one of the interviewers, two men are walking down the street. One is neatly dressed and the other looks kind of angry and kind of just like, disheveled and dirty.
Like homeless?
Yeah. And so basically it goes on to talk, like, who would you rather, oh, did it stop recording? Oh, who would you rather interview, and obviously most people would go for
the
clean shaven, the guy who looks together. And so it just comes, it literally the whole chapter was just about the who, what, and when, and where. Like who you're interviewing and who is interviewing, where you're interviewing, and if where you're interviewing is affecting what
there's just so
what
many
data
factors
is gonna,
that goes into it.
And so what I got from this is that it's kind of sort of impossible to get a very, very accurate statistic when you're, like, interviewing people.
Yeah.
Because some people lie, some people...
What I've learned from this is when I hear a statistic like 75% of Americans hate Obama, literally when I hear any statistic from now on, I'm just not going to believe it.
Yeah, this has ruined my faith in statistics, kind of.
The thing I learned from it is, like, people lie, and, like, I didn't always understand, because, like, when I see, usually before, because I like to think math is cool, so when I see, like, statistics, I would, like, believe it, but now I can see a way in which they can be skewed to a certain person's, argument.
Right.
So
the thing that gets me is that, like, it's, like, how to lie with statistics, but, like, you're not lying, like, it becomes the truth.
Right.
Because of what you're, like, that
kind of
blows my
mind. But
like,
not
ridiculous.
Really. Yeah. It's just the whole thing's biased.
I wonder how to tell the truth with stuff. Because, I mean, reading this, I was just like, oh, there's a lot of ways to lie. How can you actually
tell the truth?
And in a way, I guess, like, they are telling the truth because, like, they're not making up numbers. Like, they did interview this group of people, but the fact that they excluded a huge, like, group of people just skews it.
So, I guess we should wrap up chapter one, because we're going on 10 minutes now.
Like, meet
you guys up next week.
The average, like, all that can, like, skew it. Like, the one example was, like, if you're moving into this area and, like, he wants to know how much money, like, overall people make.
Right.
And, like, there's, like, the average of whatever, but, like, you find out they're, like, it was only that because, like, two of the people they interviewed, like, were, like, millionaires, and that just makes the average, like, spike way up.
Yeah, the two outliers.
Yeah.
But,
But, yeah, that guy really got steam. Like, he was expecting, Society Hill, and he got 52nd Street. But anyway, that happened because, of the type of average they use for that statistic. Chapter 2 just basically talks about, the different averages that, people can use for finding a good statistic that makes the neighborhood, or whatever they're talking about, good. I think here they use the mean, and, it talked about, like, how most of the people in the neighborhood, like, earned a really low wage, but those two millionaires brought the percent, like, the average way, way up, because, you know.
So, like, in that aspect, if you want to find out, like, the actual, like, level of data, you
should
just
look at
the
mode. Like,
right, right.
With mean and median, they're, when you're looking for, like, housing and whatever, or whoever, they're most influenced by the outliers.
Right.
So that's why they'll give you, like, the least accurate depiction of whatever the data is.
Right, right, right.
Like, mode shows you a bunch, I mean, shows you the most common, so I guess that would be the best
right.
out of the three.
It would, yeah. It also went on to talk about how that same neighborhood, apparently they didn't want to get, like, a raise in taxes or, like, something with, like, transportation. I don't feel like looking through this.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about how they wanted to take that same neighborhood and change the statistic to make the neighborhood seem poor. So I think they use, like, mode or mean or something. But, yeah, basically Chapter 2 was talking about, depending on the average, it can really, really affect how the statistic looks and just basically the overall depiction of what you were trying to show. It also talked about a company. I think on page 34, it talked about, say an employer wanted to make it seem that he pays his employees a lot of money.
Right.
Well, you have to consider
like the different levels of employees.
Yeah,
right, right.
And
yeah.
like how each person, like how much money each person makes. And you really can't, like, get all those details just with one average, say, for instance, the mean. So, say, for example,
because if you have, like, say you have, like, just, like, in a broad sense, like, you have, like, 10 assembly workers and one CEO.
Right.
The assembly workers get paid, like, $1 an hour. The CEO gets paid, like,
$1 million.
A million.
And so
then,
it
like,
makes it
And
mean.
Then, you, like, they do the means, like, oh, well, our average for how people get paid is, like, $300,000.
Right, right, right.
So, like, well, yeah, because that's the CEO's pay.
Yeah,
not
everyone's pay. So you,
I should draw one.
So that's why I think the most accurate average, I'm not really sure if the author meant to
I see mode.
Say
that,
yeah.
I don't think he meant to,
it
like...
It makes sense. Like, you look at the one that's most often. Like,
yeah, the most often
tell,
number. Yeah, and then also talk... I think the next best one is the median, because based on the median, you can see, oh, well... Half of the workers make this much or more, and half of the workers make this much or less. So I think,
right,
because
they say like, oh, it's like 300,000, but then like you see the median's only like 30 or something. Like
right.
then you see that like that most of the numbers are that low.
Right, right, right. So going from least accurate to accurate, I think mode.
Yeah, I go with mode.
Mode is the most accurate because it
like
tells
mode.
The best story.
The mean is mean.
Exactly. Yes, good. So, here we have today is Trayvon, Emily, and Penelope.
I'm Trayvon.
I'm Emily.
All right, we're back with chapter 4, Much Ado About Practically Nothing.
Yeah.
This chapter starts out with the IQ test stuff.
And it talks about how two kids, take an IQ test, and...
Yeah, they're, like, brother and sister or whatever.
Yeah,
and, then, like,
and the sister, like, ends up being smarter.
By, like...
apparently.
Yeah, by, like, 3 points or whatever.
According to the test.
Yeah.
And it just talks about, like... Well, you can't really measure intelligence, first off, just with, like, a test. Because there are so many different things you can measure. Like, creativity and charisma and
yeah,
just
and, like,
different things.
Leadership
and
or whatever.
Talks about...
And they don't take into account, like...
The range and stuff.
Like, artistic ability, musical stuff like that.
Right.
And they, but the whole thing about, like, is, like, the girl smarter than the boy, and they talk about how there's this, like, you think of it, like, there's, like, this range of what you can get, mm-hmm. and how, like, if, say, you're, like, at a 90, there's, like, five points that you could go in either direction. Like, right. You could either have a 95 or a 90, kind of like the grading system at SLA, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it just said, like, how, like, so you can't really take IQ tests to be perfect because they don't take into so many factors. So, like, the girl could actually get 3 points behind and the boy could get, like, 4 points above, so you don't know who's actually smarter.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was just basically chapter 4, right? Just mm-hmm. talking about, like, the ranges of stuff and just, like, taking into account different factors and, like, tests and stuff. And I think that's really interesting here, too, because, like, we don't really take tests here,
yeah.
I guess. And...
And chapter 5 starts in about how, like, I'm a very person who's oriented with, like, spatial memory and stuff, like, visual, so this chapter spoke to me in a way. One quote that I wrote down in the beginning, it says, when numbers in tabular form are taboo and words will not do the work as well, as is often the case, there is one answer left, draw a picture.
Right.
And I was saying how, like, with picture, like, picto charts or whatever, like...
You can tell a story.
Yeah. And, like, there's this whole thing, just, like, back when I was talking about a couple, like, last chapter, how,
chapter
like...
Three.
Yeah, how, if you just skew the y-axis, you can make it, like...
Look so much different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, like, gives examples, too, of, like, the guy with the face.
Yeah, his face just gets stretched out and stuff.
Yeah. Looks so much different, but it's essentially the same thing. It's just stretched out.
And he says, oh, they just look at it, he's like, well, that's impressive. He's like, well, what's impressive about it? He just looks squished. That's just why it's impressive.
Yeah, it's right. Kind of like the graph that was shown last time. Well, not shown, but that we seen about...
About Bush.
Yeah, about Bush, how it was just like about Obama, how it was just like 0.1% with the unemployment rate, but it looked as though it was like really like wavy, but
like a huge
difference. Yeah, but like it really wasn't.
Right. I think chapter 5 and 6 really were a lot like chapter 3.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
all talked about like how you can trick people into thinking a specific thing just by, like, the way you set up a graph or a bar
right,
graph.
Right.
Because they do tell stories. It's just how you decide to, like, tweak them and make them look to tell what story you want to be told.
Yeah.
And the thing about these chapters is, like, the thing about these chapters that are different from the others is, like, the others are talking about how the actual data, like, the actual, like, surveys and whatnot, can how you can lie with statistics that way. He's just talking about like the actual like graphs and physical like seeable things.
Yeah.
That if you just like even like just stretch out the y-axis, how it looks different. But like even like the data could be correct. But
it's just like things that are the truth, things that are like set in stone, shouldn't be so easy to manipulate.
Right.
And then it pretty much seamlessly gets like flows into chapter 6, and chapter 6 starts talking more about like how like bar graphs can lie too, and how like. Now they get into like the pictures. Like, have you ever seen like a chart, like a bar graph that has like money bags?
Right.
It's like, oh, well, someone has a lot more money bags than the person. But it's like, those are just money bags. Like, they could each mean a dollar. Like,
right.
That person has 2 money bags. He must be a lot richer. No, he just has $2 and the other person has 1.
Right.
And then even like,
I think a lot of big companies use stuff like this.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, in chapter 5, it talked about some steel company like using misleading graphs to make people like trust them more, I guess.
Yeah. I think like when you come down to it, like the masses, like people are just kind of stupid.
Yeah.
So like if you just have like
just a picture.
Like and they have like yeah, if things look more impressive and things look like just important,
right.
Then you're more likely to say like, "Oh, well,
yeah,
they must be right on that."
Money.
And then, like, the thing with, like, they had 1 money bag and 2 money bags. And they just had 1 money bag and then a bigger money bag.
So it could be essentially the same amount.
Yeah, it just looks better.
It could be, like, $1 and, like, 10 dimes or $1 and 100 pennies. You just you'd be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, so visualization is really, I finally got it right, guys, is really an important thing when it comes to lying with statistics.
Yeah.
So... 2 things we have learned so far. How you find your statistic and then how you, like, show it. like on a graph or something, right, or how you present it.
And also that you should, if you need to like find out the truth, just look at the range.
Oh, that too.
Or I mean, as much of the truth as you can find out, because right, you'll never really be able to get the truth, honestly.
So far, just a brief summary, we've learned about sample space, collecting the data, and now we're really going into like how to present the data, like how it should be done. And so I guess like if you use both to like skew the statistic, then I guess you're really lying. Like is there any way to like,
you know,
make this truthful, I guess?
Yeah, we're really seeing how the
but yeah, oh,
how the make statistics like work for us to, I don't know, sell stuff.
I feel way more like, not completely, but I feel more like I'm in on it now, you know? Like, oh, I see what you guys are putting down. Like, can't get past me anymore.
Watch commercials differently.
Completely, anyway. Yeah, definitely watch. I watch TV completely differently. I look at the world differently now.
Yeah.
Just advertisements in general and just, like, ugh.
You're lying about that.
Yeah.
Scumbags. But, yeah, is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about?
Not for chapter 6. Right,
we're back with chapter 7, the semi-attached figure. This chapter starts out with a quote, if you can't prove what you want to prove, demonstrate something else and pretend they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious to me because people do that all the time.
Right, and so it goes into detail about the guy who wants to, like, sell cold medicine or whatever, and the way he does it is that he says that, oh, this medicine killed, like, how many, 13,000
germs. 31,000-ish germs in, like, 11 seconds.
In a test tube. And to make it look, like, official and legit, he added a picture of a doctor and said that this would really help cure the cold.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't cure the cold. It says, like, if you can't prove that your thing cures the cold,
right,
you can publish this thing that'll make people think pretty much that you can cure cold.
It's like saying it, but it's like not saying it, but like
implying it.
Yeah, implying it.
And so, users really like maybe. Well, anyway, the guy it makes an interesting point that like buyers of the medicine should really just like really think about that for a second. Like, oh, well, they put this medicine in a test tube, will it still have the same effects in my throat? Maybe they had to like,
right,
they said something about diluting the medicine so it wouldn't like burn throat tissue,
yeah,
or what if it's not the same germs that cause the cold,
right, right,
or it could be totally two different things and that medicine could actually not do anything. So the way advertisers put their product out on the market,
yeah,
the way they advertise can really affect how consumers,
yeah,
will receive their stuff.
And they talked about, like, briefly with the doctors smoking cigarettes, like, 27% of a large sample of doctors smoke Froties more than any other brand. And it's saying, like, well, yeah, the brand might be phony or whatever, and, like, doctors, like, whoa, well, if doctors are smoking these cigarettes, they must be not that bad for you, but, like, and it was,
mm-hmm,
like, in all due respect for a doctor, do they really know that much about tobacco and, like, the chemicals that are in tobacco, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. Did you want to talk about the fog
example? Oh, yeah. I like this example because it was, like, I think I like things when, I mean, I like things more when you can tell when they're in a real-world example.
Right.
And it says, like, another kind of nonsense they have is, like, the article writer used that you can show that clear weather is more dangerous than foggy weather because more accidents, like, you'd think that foggy weather is more dangerous because you can't see,
mm-hmm,
but more accidents happen in clear weather because clear weather happens more often.
Often.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Foggy weather, I mean, I guess in some parts of the country you can have it pretty often, but foggy weather, like, around here is pretty rare.
Yeah.
Right.
So you have, like, a bigger sample space, so more often than not. I mean, more often.
Oh, I just looked at this other thing. It says, more people were killed by airplanes last year than in 1910, therefore modern planes are more dangerous. No, it's just that hundreds of times more people are flying now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And more airplanes.
Yeah. And then, last thing in this chapter that was interesting was the Navy thing. And it was, like, the death rate in the Navy during the Spanish-American War was 9 per thousand.
So it seems that, like, it's safer to be in the Navy.
Yeah, it was, like, and for civilians in New York City during the same period, it was 16 per thousand. And it's, like, the Navy later used this to say, like, oh, it's safer to be in the Navy than out of it. But it's, like, the groups are not comparable because the Navy is made up of, like, mainly young men who are, like, strong and, like, healthy. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the population is made up of, like, children, adults, sick people, poor people, like, cold, like, people with diseases, people who are, like, way more higher death rate wherever they are, whatever.
Right.
And the last thing, actually, in Chapter 7 was, like, about this girl who used this rinse on her hair.
Or the living room, where, the photographer will do, like, the before and after living room.
Right,
like,
right.
The before is, like, a really, like, ugly room, and then after it looks like it's totally transformed. But you also have to take into, like, you have to think about, like, lighting. And,
yeah.
Because I know in, like, photography class, lighting and, like, the angles and just...
Yeah.
And
the thing about the before picture and after picture of the girl, like, the before picture, she kind of looked, like, homely and, like, plain. But then the second picture, like, the photographer had her, like, persuaded her to smile and throw back lighting on her hair, so, like, more credit belongs to the photographer than
and she's, like, photographer wearing better clothing and stuff. She doesn't even look the same.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And now chapter 8, post hoc rides again. I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
Wait, what?
That's what it's called. It's called Chapter 8, Post Hoc Rides Again.
Well, it talks about,
I think of, like, Boss Hogs from, what's it called? That show. Whatever. And this one was interesting, too, because, like, it was, like, people who have low college grades smoke cigarettes, and they're saying, like, oh, well, I guess if you smoke cigarettes, you're gonna get low grades. And
causation and correlation.
The author was like, in this particular study, like, it was properly done, like, the sample space was big enough and, like, carefully chosen, and the correlation having a high significance and so on, but, like, the one thing you gotta, like, look at is that you can't look at, it's, like, causation, like, A happens to B, so therefore B must cause A or whatever. And it was like, well, which is the cause and which is the effect? In other words,
because they have low grades, they smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, like, you'd be stressed, like, you'd be depressed because you have those grades that you are smoking cigarettes.
You have to, like, take in all the factors.
So cigarettes making you have low grades.
And then, it also talked about in that chapter about, like, cancer rates and, in, places that, that produce a lot of milk. And so for a while, people thought, oh, well, milk gives you cancer. Or, like, places that, like, consume a lot of dairy products.
Back to that, like, the thing that being beer, remember, he was, like, ice cream and
shock attacks. Right. So, I was actually just thinking about that. But, it comes down to causation and correlation. Just because something is happening a lot in a specific area and there just happens to be another thing that happens a lot, too, it doesn't mean that that's the cause.
It doesn't mean they're even related.
Right.
Let's see. And then, like, one of the last things in Chapter 8, it was one of the last things, like, this girl, Susie Brown, she read this, like, interview thing that's, like, what effect does going to college have on your chances of remaining unmarried? And the answer is, like, if you're a woman, it skyrockets your chances of becoming an old maid. But if you're a man, it has the opposite effect. It minimizes your chances of staying a bachelor.
Right.
So, like, Susie, age 17, reads this, and she, like, figures that, like, if she goes to college, she will be less likely to get a man than if she doesn't. And this is what the article says, and, like, they go with it, but, like, they don't back it up. And note also that while the statistics are Cornell's, the conclusions are, like, basically, like, you can come up with whatever idea you want from it. Like, you take what you...
Not even what
you sexist. Yeah, you know, just, like, what is that, from, like, the 50s?
Yeah.
It's gotta be.
I mean, they,
When's the last time you heard the word old maid?
And, the N-word.
Oh, yeah, that was used quite a lot in this book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They also used the word spinster.
Oh,
heard that?
It also talked about, like, 20,000 being a lot.
Yeah.
So it's probably from
the I actually think that the Recess, in the show Recess,
wasn't
the teacher's name a spinster?
Yes.
Yeah. Because, like, old spinster is what you call, like, an old woman who's, like, angry and stuff.
She was the
aide, wherever. She was the aide lady, and she had, like, that little boy
in the yellow
dress.
Yeah, it was. But anyway.
Now we're on to chapter 9.
Yep.
How to statisticulate. The first quote that I found, pretty much always the first quotes, like the first paragraph of the chapters are always pretty much like, they give you a good overview of what's going to happen.
That's how I passed SATs.
Someone says, misinforming people by the use of statistical material might be called statistical manipulation, in a word, though not a very good one, statisticulation.
Right.
And then they, so we talked about, so far in the book, we talked about, like, bar graphs, picture charts, mm-hmm. like that, and now that we're talking about how statistics could be lied with maps.
Right. And so it shows a map on page 103 of how this can be done. You guys can see that, right?
Yeah.
But,
just like by shading.
It looks misleading, to be honest. But
just by shading certain parts, you can make other parts stand out more. All right, so chapter 9, how to statisticulate.
That's a cool word, though.
Right. But yeah, after the map stuff in chapter 9, whatever, it talks about, like, there's, like, a lot of things that, like, there's proportions have a lot to do with it. Like, families of four are by no means commonly twice as wealthy as families of two. Like, the way they just word things.
Right.
And, like, there was a thing with Karl Marx, and he was saying, like, we assume the waste to be 6%, the raw materials cost around, like, 350 euros, the 10,000 spindles cost, we assume, like, 1 euro per spindle, and the wear and tear we put at 10%. And he did a bunch of calculations and stuff, and then, like, for a 10-hour day, this gives him necessary labor, like, in quotation marks, two thirty-thirds of an hour. Like, that seems nice, but, like, it's all a bluff. It's just, like, he lied about it.
Right.
And then later, in the next page...
talks about, like, pay cuts and, like, how the boss made it look better, I guess.
And then later they talked about the flour example. Like, this guy was saying, like, flowers are 100% cheaper than 4 months ago. He didn't, like, mean that florists were now giving them away, but, like, that's what he said.
Right.
Like, I think, like, if you take them literally, they're just like, oh, well, that's not what I meant.
Right.
Which is funny.
Which is, it almost seems like they want you to believe that.
Yeah.
But then when it actually comes down to it, it's just like, oh, I didn't really mean that. Why did you imply that?
Like, if you're just, like, going, like, brainless, like, just going, like, oh, it's 100% cheaper. I'm gonna go get it.
You gotta just, like, you gotta look into it. You gotta read into it. You can't just, like, take things how they are.
I also think a really cute thing at the top of page 113 is it says that 187 years of publishing experience went into this book. And, like... for someone who, like, thinks for a moment, they're just like, oh, that sounds really impressive. But when you really think about it, you're just like, wait, no one lives for 187 years. And then you look at, like, the small print, and it says that it combined the ages of, like, the whole entire editing
team. The author, the editor, the illustrator, the printer, and the
writer. And so when you do that, too, these people haven't been editing their entire lives.
Like, I don't know, two or three or whatever.
It seems impressive, and it seems like a lot of work has gone into editing this book. But in reality, it probably only took, like, maybe, like, a year or two.
Yeah.
And so, just adding that big number makes it seem more impressive and legit, I guess.
Yeah, it brings it, like, quality for his concept.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big number, but, like, maybe my first 5 years, I was just learning how to, like, the very beginning steps of editing. So, it's, like...
And another thing with, like, the lying about, like, just, like... what words you use, there's this guy who, like, a roadside merchant, and someone asked him, like, to explain how he could sell rabbit sandwiches so cheap, and he was like, well, I have to put in some horse meat, too, but I mix them 50-50. And in that regard, you'd think, like, half of the meat would be rabbit, and half the meat, like, 1 pound rabbit, 1 pound horse, but he's saying, no, like, one horse, one rabbit.
Oh, goodness.
And that's, like, more than 75% horse, and, like, less than, like, 10% rabbit, or whatever.
That's funny.
Which is, I would not want to eat there.
Yep.
Horse meat
is nasty.
I've never had horse meat.
Oh, it talks on page 119. It then goes to talk about, like, geometric averages, and it shows two different graphs. And in the first graph, it shows that, like, bread and milk prices are going up, and that seems to make it the scenario look worse. But in the second graph, they just change the geometric average to make it look like the prices were going down, and so...
Yeah, which is just, like,
ridiculous. But it's the same thing, so...
And then, like, the girl is, like, frowning when the prices are going up, and then, like, she's smiling when they're going down.
So I guess, like, people who own, like, grocery stores will use that, too. It's so misleading.
the last thing that I thought interesting in chapter 9 was they said, the fact is that despite its mathematical base, statistics is as much an art as it is a science. A great many manipulations and even distortions are possible within the bounds of propriety.
Right. I think, isn't this picture kind of interesting to you guys? It says, I just love my new mixed-up egg beater. It's so flimsy and cheap. And, like, that kind of reminds me of, like, the commercials. Like, the infomercials or whatever. And you're just buy this vacuum or buy this, like, cutter or blender. It'll guarantee to, like, make your life easier, I guess.
Like, he called it, like, flimsy and cheap when he might say, like, light and economical. You know?
Right, right. Ah. So, like, key wording. That's a really good point. Keywords really affect how people will look at that that product. We talked about that earlier too, about what was it?
The flowers?
No, it was talking about like electricity is available
right.
to farmers. And it's just like all in the wording, like cheap and flimsy versus light and like economical and available versus actually has.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting end to that chapter.
Yeah, I like that. That was to go. Tying it back
and,
to previous chapters.
The last chapter, chapter 10, had a talk back to a statistic, which was pretty much a chapter I've been looking forward to this entire book.
Yep.
Which is basically saying, like, well, what do you do now? Do you just live your life in, like, lies? Or, like, how do you stand up to this? And there are a bunch of key points. And the first one is, who says so? So you gotta look at, like, who's saying this? It's a scientist, lab, like, whatever.
Are they actually legit, or are they just, like, trying to make it look like it's legit?
Like, is he legit? Like, we did a classwork a while ago. It was, like, the researcher, he went into his colleague's file and took a bunch of things out. It was like, well, that's not very professional.
Yeah, that doesn't make it a legit thing anymore.
The second thing is, how do they know this? Like, what research did they do? And, is the research valid? Is it, like, up to date?
And, like, you know how we were talking about in the first two chapters about, how the data is collected, like, if they have interviewers that are biased, if they have a good representative sample, for instance, like, who did they interview? Were the interviewers lying? And also, in the previous chapter where it talked about, the test tube cough medicine, well, how do they collect that data? How is that the same thing as, like, what we actually need? So, I think that's one of the most important points to me.
And then this is, like, what's missing, which is, like, if you're looking at, like, a graph or something, like, oh, wow, there's no y-axis.
Right.
Like, that's pretty obvious, but, like, later, like, there's more, like, when they're doing, especially when they're doing, like, studies, you can say, like, well, they never actually, like, had two specific groups of people, or, like, they had too many or too few, like, there's just things that are missing.
Like, when they, like, say, like,
And that's actually,
I think that's the hardest thing to look at, I think.
Like, what's missing? Because
whenever you do those problems, like, for me anyway, like, when you do math problems, like, where did this person go wrong? Find the mistake. That's always the hardest thing for me.
Yeah, same.
Because, like, just finding that little thing, because I look at the big picture.
And the thing with what's missing is most of the time that people, like, make a statistic and try to make it, like, make their product look better than it actually is, they will leave out a lot of details. Yeah. And, like, trying to figure out what they left out, I think, is the hardest part.
This whole book reminds me a lot of, like political campaigns and whatnot. Like, what's missing is, like, if I say, people don't like Obama, and, like, you just pull the half that doesn't like Obama, and, like, what's missing is the other half.
Right.
So, like, and they wouldn't say that, and you have
The next point is, did somebody change the subject? And it says, like, a business was said, like, only upgraded by pointing out that April retails were greater than the year before. But, like, what was missing was the fact that Easter had come in March in the earlier year and April in the later year.
Yeah, that was a really interesting point.
Yeah, so, like, just, like, if you don't look at it, like, you have to know everything. You gotta, which in some ways I think you can't know everything, because how are you supposed to know that? Like, they don't say which year it is, so you can't go back and look at a calendar or whatever. And then pretty much, like,
it doesn't make sense. That was another interesting point.
That's, like, the main one, I think. Like, you can, it's somewhat,
that's
like
the first step to me.
Somewhat the easiest and the hardest in a way. Like, you just have to look at it, like, kind of like you have to look at it unbiased, but also biased. You have to, like, go into it, like, with a clean slate and, like, an open mind. You'd be like, does this really make sense?
Did that Bush graph that we saw before.
Right.
I looked at that and I was like, oh, this is so exaggerated. Yeah. That's not.
Sometimes you know right away. Sometimes it's just like, I'm a little fishy about this.
Yeah, you'll think about it and you'll be like, oh, that's interesting. And it'll come back later and you'll be like, wait a second. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And I think that really is the first step to, you know.
I think with all these steps, I feel way more confident in, like, being lied to by statistics now. And,
like, I feel like I won't be, like, another sheep.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, like, we're all sheep, like...
Technically.
Yeah, somehow. I mean, like, there's some things you just can't, like...
Control.
Yeah, but I think I definitely feel more comfortable now.
Yeah. I won't be tricked into thinking...
I don't feel as, like, scared, like, conspiracy theories, like, as the masses anymore. Like, I'm not paranoid about being, like, duped.
That's true.
It was interesting. Because, like, in the beginning, I was, like, completely oblivious to, like, all of these things.
Yeah, same.
And, like, as we was reading, like, since it took so long to read the actual book...
You realize how much you actually know.
Yeah. Between, like, chapter 1 to 3, I was just like, oh, no. I can never believe anything ever again.
Chapters 1 through 3 were just very depressing. Like, well, crap. Well, who do I believe?
You know, like,
no one.
Yeah.
Like, 4 to 10 just tells me, oh, well, now I know how to, like, see through it.
I think this book really taught me to... not just automatically believe everything that's all the information that's put out in front of me. Before, if I saw a commercial and it said, well, we got this doctor and this dentist to approve, and like we had this study to show that 1 in 9 people love this thing or whatever, but and before I would just automatically be like, oh, well, that seems legit, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a legit thing. But this book has taught me, like, to look at the bigger picture and, like, to look behind the statistics.
Even things that, like, aren't statistical. Just things that, like...
That tell stories.
Things that, like, you look at or you hear and then you automatically make an opinion.
Right.
Like, in life, you're just gonna have to look at everything. You're gonna have to look at the factors.
Right.
And, like, that reminds me, like, I just turned 18 and, like, I voted for the first time.
Hmm.
And, like, politics are just a mess to me. And, like, you hear one thing about a politician and then it's like... Well, right, and that means they're good. But then, like, you read background information to find out all the other horrible things they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, there's never going to be anyone I'll ever like. So, like, this is awful.
Yeah, it is.
And that's life.
Yeah.
Statistics is life.
Right.
All right. I think that's us. We sign off. I'm Emily.
I'm Penelope.
And I'm Trayvon.
See you never.
See you never. Thanks for reading How to Lie with Stats with us.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.